grab your Bible, head over to Matthew 11. That's our Bible reading for this week as we continue to make our way in 2025 through the Gospels of Matthew and John. And we're up to chapter 11, though we probably ought to do a little connection back to chapter 10, right? Yeah. And really that takes us back to chapter 9. So Jesus is going about preaching. He sees the need for workers. He tells his disciples to pray for workers. And then he instructs his disciples and sends them out into the harvest. And in chapter 10, we get that heavy collection of teaching, right?
Right.
And then we get to chapter 11, and we know nothing about what happens with the disciples.
Yeah, ironically, they're gone.
Yes.
They're gone.
The story continues on with Jesus.
Yeah.
Though I think in chapter 11, we're going to see some connections, though, between the warnings Jesus was giving them and then kind of the realities
right.
that he encounters as we get into chapter 11.
Right. Yeah, so the opening of chapter 11 is kind of really, you know, with the stuff about John the Baptist, kind of works on a couple of different levels. On the one hand, it's an example of the struggle to believe in Jesus, to see Jesus in this unexpected, you know, the ministry of Jesus turned out unexpected from the way people thought the Messiah was going to go. Even John gets a little, you know, are you the one or do we expect another? So, you know, on one level, just, you know, really discerning Jesus in the oddity of what his ministry is turning out to be. On another level, well, and part of that's because John is, you know, he has suffered for bearing witness to Jesus. And so on another level, now this, and this ties back more really immediately to chapter 10, you know, Jesus talks about when he prepares the disciples to go out and do the teaching that they're now apparently out and doing, you know, Jesus begins to experience himself some of that pushback. And John is the forerunner of that as well, because, you know, John is, you know, looking at prison, eventually looking at death. And because verse 2, he's in prison. So it's ominous. You know, the don't think I came to bring peace, but a sword, Jesus said back there, chapter 10.
Right.
John's the forerunner of that as well. And so that's being worked out. You know, and then you keep going a little bit further and beyond John. You know, Jesus talked to them about, you know, what happens when cities rejected. It'll be more tolerable for Sodom and Gomorrah in that day. And now you have concrete cities in verses, you know, 20 through 24 being named as places where the message was not well received. And Jesus then explicitly saying, you know, it's going to be better for, you know, Sodom in those days than for you. So chapter 11, in some ways, the working out for John and Jesus of what Jesus told the disciples is going to be part of the mission of spreading the news of the kingdom.
Yeah, I wonder, too, if we could kind of pause and run a tangent for just a second,
yeah.
Because, you know, as always, we're trying to think about parents and kids and talk to your kids about the reading. And I see if you take 9, 10, and 11 all together, I see an important message to emphasize with young people, and that is the realities they're going to face on the ground doing this work. I think sometimes we focus on teaching our kids how to get along with culture rather than preparing them to do battle with culture. And I think that that we really do kind of have a stark contrast here, both with Jesus' instructions in chapter 10 and then the realities we see in chapter 11, that the disciples are going to be met with hostility, and we need to be preparing our kids to face off against a hostile world.
Yeah.
And I don't know that we think about that sometimes. I don't even know that we're even really excited about talking to our kids about something like that.
Well, we talk to our kids more, you know, probably at least stereotypically, you know, about not compromising with the world.
Right.
As long as you don't compromise with the world and engage in its sinful activities, you know, then otherwise whatever's left over, so to speak, you can be in the world but not of the world. Whereas the reality is Jesus says it's not just about don't compromise with the world, it's about be prepared for conflict with the
right.
world. That's part of it as well. And yeah, we probably don't talk about that as much.
Yeah, and the fact that we're not just supposed to sort of get along in culture.
Yeah.
That we're meant to try to change culture through the preaching of the gospel.
Yeah.
And I think again, that's counterintuitive in these heavy political days. I think we think too much politically about that and not spiritually. That what I need to be doing is trying to reach people with a message, which ultimately is where a great deal of the conflict for Christians come, because there is a battle between the agenda being pressed by culture and the message being pressed by disciples. And when those two clash, you're going to have conflict. And so it isn't just about getting along. It's about engaging and even, I guess maybe the best way to say that is battling the adversaries for the hearts and souls of the lost people around us, and anticipate that we will meet with difficulty as we try to do that.
Well, that's the thing. I think every culture, it's not just a, you know, every culture, any time, any place, you know, has a lot of, you know, rank sinfulness running rampant in it. Every culture lives by lies of some sort or another, and the gospel tears down all lies, all human pretension. And so if you're simply just bearing witness to the truth of Jesus, it's going to, that truth is going to inevitably come into conflict with some sort of lie, some sort of shibboleth, some sort of value that's deeply embedded in any culture of any time, of any place. It can be different in different times, different places. Right. But the gospel will, I mean, because that's the thing we forget. At the end of the day, it wasn't, you know, everybody wanted Jesus dead, because whether you were a Sadducee, which is the equivalent of a religious liberal back in those days, to the Pharisees, who were the religious conservatives back in those days, to the run-of-the-mill people who were just disappointed he wasn't their kind of Messiah, you know, but when all was said and done, by the end of the gospel story, you know, Jesus had disappointed, frustrated, alienated, or come into conflict with essentially everybody. He's rejected by all, because at the end of the day, the gospel message touches, you know, is an inversion of the world.
It messes with everybody. It
messes with everybody.
It does.
And so there's going to be, at some point, some sort of conflict.
Coming back to the text in Matthew 11, I think one of the big questions people often have about this text is verse 3, where John the Baptist is asking,
yeah,
are you the expected one? I think a lot of people are troubled by that, because they just think, John knows.
Yeah.
Right?
Because
he baptized him.
And right.
He
saw the Spirit come down.
And all that. And so, and how could John now be asking that question? And I think some people see that as a textual problem.
Yeah.
That is John backtracking here or what?
Yeah, and so, you know, and it's funny, I mean, you know, and then there's nothing new about that. You know, commentators for a long time have, you know,
right.
you know that's a very old question about that moment. And there's two possibilities. One, you know, in terms of the history of interpretation of the verse, one possibility is, you know, some have suggested, well, John is asking this rhetorically. He's trying to prod Jesus into action. Of course, John is in prison now. He's got a personal stake in seeing Jesus be more active. But it's more rhetorical than actual. You know, John is just kind of saying, you know, this isn't a good look. This isn't going well. What you going to do about it? You know, to others, you know, then the other possibility is John legitimately is, you know, there's a difference in losing, you know, losing your faith to doubt and just having some doubts. You can, you know, faith and doubt can kind of wrestle for a while. And if John, you know, if the right reading is John having some measure of doubt, I don't think he lost faith as such. Otherwise, he wouldn't have asked Jesus at all. Because he does, you know, he's trying to reconcile, like all of us do sometimes in those dark moments of life. Intellectually, I know what's true. Emotionally, I know what I feel because of what's going on in my life, and I'm having a hard time reconciling. Those two things are at war within me. What I in my head know versus what in my heart, you know, I'm feeling and I'm frustrated right now.
Yeah.
And so I think John's just human.
I do think that it is his humanity that's really evidencing itself there, because the truth is, not one of us can't relate to that struggle of even something we've been very, very convinced about, then getting jammed up and having a season of doubt and uncertainty about that. And I think it's perfectly natural for John to be looking here for some affirmation. And I think it's important not to miss that, because I don't think that's unusual for us. You know, it's very easy as a young, healthy 30-year-old, when life is all going your way, for your faith in God to be strong, and you look at your prosperity and your good situation in life as evidence of God's blessing and all that, and then your dad dies, you get a serious diagnosis, you have a serious issue with one of your kids, and life isn't so good anymore,
right?
And that foundation that seemed so secure when life was just perfect.
Well, and you know intellectually that, you know, the Bible makes clear that just because you live righteously doesn't mean you always get a good outcome in life. And you know that intellectually, but you're still feeling frustrated that, you know, in some way God has left you hanging, perhaps, because I really was trying to live righteously, and yet, you know, nothing has worked out, or you know, something's gone askew.
Yeah. So it's I think it's And not surprising at all to find that John may have a dark season where he's struggling and wants some affirmation. Right. I think we want those things too sometimes.
Right.
The chapter, I think, closes, and you had kind of some dark segments of this chapter, but it kind of closes with this
upbeat.
It does.
Good news.
This little
good
piece news at the end, this invitation.
Yeah.
What do you make of all that?
Well, I think that's the thing is, you know, of course, we're supposed to be in Matthew, but, you know, this isn't Matthew, but in the world you will have trouble, but be of good cheer. I have overcome the world. You know, this is not a mark of God has lost the narrative or God has lost control. This is part of God's schedule, God's plan. And so don't get distracted or discouraged by the conflict in the short term. You know, the reality is this is the way to the true rest.
And think about verse 30, my yoke is easy and my burden is light.
Right.
That's a very interesting way to describe walking with Jesus when he's also described it as a straight and narrow way earlier in chapter 7.
Yeah.
So how do you rectify that seemingly conflicting ideas?
I think one way you rectify is, again, short and long term. You know, short, it's kind of like, you know, if God forbid you get a cancer diagnosis and you go downtown to MD Anderson, immediately it's going to be hard, may well be painful. There's going to be a struggle. But things go well, in the end, you get your health back and hope of a longer life. And so, you know, that's the thing. We want the rest now. And part of what Jesus is saying, the reality is you're in a fallen world. Satan is real. Sin is real. The struggle is real. And so, like it or not, right now, you have a cancer diagnosis, so to speak. You're in this fallen world, and there's no getting around that. And so as long as you're in this fallen world, the way is straight and narrow. It's a struggle, against sin, temptation, the culture, whatever. But in the end, my way really is a way to peace. And you see that in some of, as disciples grow from disciples into apostles, you can almost sense that peace that they have even before they're dead in some of their writings. You know, because you do, Paul talked about the peace that passeth understanding will guard your hearts in Philippians. Paul wasn't, here yet in this story, but he had found a rest even in the midst of his very well-documented troubles.
Yeah.
But that's the thing is, the more you spiritually mature in the way of Jesus, even before the full rest has come, you begin to have the peace that passes understanding.
Yeah, and that's the thing that I think is really valuable here, that ultimately, however things may appear in a snapshot, in a moment of time, that ultimately you come to see that the lighter burden through life is the one that comes with following Jesus. And what ends up being the heavier burden is the people who choose the path of sin, heavier and more burdensome in every way.
Right.
And I think sometimes it doesn't seem that way. Sometimes that's counterintuitive. It seems like Christians have the harder way to go. And in a sense, that's right, but not in the ultimate sense. Yeah.
It's all about time frames. It's all about time frames.
That's exactly right. So something to ponder this week, Matthew 11. Is where we'll be reading. Always remember that if you guys have questions, you'd like us to talk about them, we're happy to wrap those into the podcast as well. Hope you're blessed by your reading this week.